September 1938. The fate of Europe hangs in the balance. In an effort to appease Adolf Hitler and the Nazi war machine, Allied leaders handed part of Czechoslovakia called the Sudetenland over to Germany. A smiling British Prime Minister Neville Chamberlain returned from Munich and came down the steps of his airplane in triumph.
And the Prime Minister comes home, home to an empire filled with joy and relief, home to a welcome that he will never forget.
It seemed like a true turning point in history.
The settlement of the Czechoslovakian problem, which has now been achieved, is, in my view, only the prelude to a larger settlement in which all Europe may find peace.
But neither the Czechoslovakia problem nor peace had been remotely achieved. Hitler wasn't done with Germany's neighbor, and he was prepared to seize every advantage he could to finish the job, even a medical emergency. 6 months later, in March 1939, Czechoslovakia's president Emil Hácha came to Berlin to meet with Hitler, Hermann Göring, and other Nazi leaders. This is scholar Norman Ohler, author of the book Blitzed, Drugs in Nazi Germany.
During that visit, Göring put a paper on the desk and said, please sign here, this is your capitulation, the German troops are coming tomorrow, if you sign here, no blood will be shed.
Hácha refused, but under the stress of the situation, the ailing president suffered what was likely a coronary episode.
The historical records show that he actually fainted. Hácha actually lost consciousness in that room with Hitler, Göring, and some other Nazi bigwigs.
And of course, if Hácha wasn't awake and functioning, then he couldn't sign the paper that would give his country away to the Nazis. Luckily, Hitler's personal physician, Theodor Morell, was standing by.
Morell was called and he injected a cocktail into the unconscious Czechoslovakian president.
But this cocktail was no martini. While it's not known for certain what was in the drugs that were shot into Hácha, most scholars think it was methamphetamine.
Certainly the cocktail had the effect that Hácha came back to life, looked around in the room and suddenly felt that he could do it, that he could trust these guys, and Göring would then say to him, come on, we'll protect you. So Hácha then signed it and basically signed over the defeat of his country. The next day Germans came and Czechoslovakia was basically gone.
The very next morning, Hitler invaded Prague without a fight.
Through the snow, the legions of occupation march into Czechoslovakia. This rapid stroke, which has outraged all freedom-loving nations of the world, is carried out with military exactitude. Artillery rolls into Prague and mounts guard on the Hradčin, the castle of King Wenceslas. Presently, from a window of the castle, you may catch a glimpse of Hitler himself contemplating his new conquest.
Hitler stands alone in that castle window, but there was another man who was certainly in the room, Dr. Theodor Morell, the man who injected the Czech president in Berlin. Throughout the war, he was always at Hitler's side, and the conquest of Czechoslovakia was far from the only way he helped alter the course of the war and history itself. I'm Sean Braswell. This is Flashback, a podcast from Aussie designed to take you on a ride through some of history's most remarkable unintended consequences. Today, a story of war and peace, of madmen and vitamins, a cautionary tale about what can happen when you give powerful people some powerful drugs. If you've ever seen a documentary film about Adolf Hitler or the Nazis, chances are you've seen some of the home movies shot by Hitler's girlfriend Eva Braun at the Berghof, the Führer's mountain retreat. In those remarkable silent color films, you can see a relaxed Hitler chatting with other Nazi leaders like Hermann Göring and Joseph Goebbels on a sun-drenched deck with the mountain view behind. The Nazis eat cake and sip tea and gleefully discuss plans for world domination. One of the figures you see repeatedly, but might not recognize, is an overweight, bald man with glasses. This was Hitler's personal physician, Dr. Theodor Morell. What you don't see, of course, is what happens when Eva Braun turns off the camera. That's when things return to normal, and the Nazis' warts are revealed. Braun goes back to biting her lips until they bleed. Dr. Morell is so unhealthy he can barely climb a flight of stairs. And Hitler himself? When the camera stops, his hands are shaking so badly, his teacup rattles loudly in its saucer. The German Führer is a wreck and a drug addict and an increasingly deranged one. And there's one man to thank for it. But believe it or not, this whole thing, and perhaps the most fateful doctor-patient relationship in history, starts with a very minor problem, one that World War II historians don't often pay much attention to: Adolf Hitler's insane and unrelenting flatulence.
Hitler suffered from pretty bad health.
This is Giles Milton, a historian and the author of When Hitler Took Cocaine and Lenin Lost His Brain.
He had suffered from stomach cramps, from diarrhea, from appalling flatulence. I mean, this was partly perhaps due to the diet that he ate. He only ate these sort of watery vegetables, which he had pureed or mashed, and he ate these virtually every meal.
Hitler had such bad gas, he would often have to leave the table. And his dietary problems left him desperate for solutions. Norman Ohler again.
Hitler was always looking for unorthodox treatments, and he did not like his conventional doctors that would send him on diets when he was complaining of stomach cramps and gas, which was his main problem in the mid-30s.
Finally, Hitler met someone who could help, even if his methods were a bit unorthodox.
Morell was a celebrity doctor in Berlin in the early 30s, and he was known to treat patients for diseases that didn't exist. He was a type of Dr. Feelgood.
Morell was also something of a medical pioneer.
This was a new approach to medicine, and he used especially vitamins in the beginning. He was sure that if you inject high dosages of vitamins into the bloodstream of a person, that person would have more energy, and that it would also elevate the mood of that person.
It's not such a crazy idea.
I mean, we do it still today. We take vitamin supplements. But I was walking once in LA, and I saw at a health food store an announcement that they were offering injections of vitamin B1. So I guess Morell, in a way, was an avant-garde health doctor or fitness doctor.
Then in 1933, something happened that made even Berlin's resident Dr. Feelgood uneasy. Someone smeared the word Jew in large letters across the plaque outside the doctor's office. Morell was not a Jew, but in the wake of that hate crime, he knew he needed to make sure others knew that as well.
His response was that he joined the Nazi Party to show that he was not a Jew, because Jews obviously weren't allowed to join the Nazi Party.
And Morell came to see the Nazis as more than just protection.
His reaction was not, what an appalling racist movement, but his reaction was, yeah, I'm going to join them so they don't, you know, so I can be part of this this movement. So that was a very opportunist reaction, but it tells a lot about Morell and his later approach in life towards the Nazis. He basically tried to take advantage of them. He was never a real believer in the ideology. He was just a believer in power and money and even fame.
And a few years later, an opportunity came knocking that would give the social-climbing Nazi vitamin peddler just the chance he desired. One day, in 1936, the phone rang in Dr. Morell's office. A few hours later, he was being flown to Munich for a special vegetarian spaghetti dinner with none other than the Führer himself. After the dinner, Hitler admitted to the doctor that his digestion was so poor he could barely function. Giles Milton again.
And he turned to Theodor Morell because Theodor Morell claimed that he would be able to help him. And help him he did, but in the most unorthodox ways.
Morell studied Hitler and his diet and his resulting digestion. After Hitler downed a typical vegetable platter one day, the doctor recorded in his diary that, quote, constipation and colossal flatulence occurred on a scale I have seldom encountered before.
He began by giving the Führer these things, these tiny little black tablets, and they were called Dr. Kuster's anti-gas pills. And Hitler was taking 16 of these pills a day. What he didn't realise is that they contained small quantities of strychnine, which, of course, is a poisoning.
but the treatment did work on the gas front. Norman Ohler.
And it did cure Hitler's bloating in 1936, 1937. And Hitler was so impressed by this effect, which was a big effect on his daily life, that he appointed Morell as his personal physician.
Dr. Feelgood had gone from being a celebrity doctor to treating the most powerful man in Europe. And for a while, everything was great.
And Hitler, in fact, did not get sick for those first years in Morell's treatment. Never got the flu or anything, never got a cold, because he was always high on, filled to the brim with vitamin C and other vitamins.
By the summer of 1941, a healthy Hitler in Germany had taken much of Europe and turned their attention to Russia.
At midday on June the 22nd, the peoples of the USSR heard the news that they were at war with Germany. Loudspeakers in the principal cities carried the voice of Monsieur Molotov, announcing that the Nazis were already flinging into battle about 100 divisions along a front extending nearly 2,000 miles.
The invasion of Russia was a critical juncture in the war, and Hitler was at odds with his generals about the best way to do it. And then?
Hitler fell ill. He had, for the first time, he was ill since the war started, actually since 36, since he met Morell. And he had a strong, very strong flu with high fever and demanded from Morell that he would give him something that would enable him to go into the military briefing room and continue his version of the campaign.
And so the loyal doctor obliged and gave the Fuhrer something stronger, a substance that would alter Hitler's physiological makeup and ultimately his conduct of the war, and with disastrous consequences. Do you have an interesting tale about unintended consequences from history or your own life? Please share it with us by emailing flashback@ozzy.com. That's flashback@ozy.com. We all need a break from the constant cycle to learn something new, to gain new perspectives. The Great Courses Plus streaming service is an excellent resource to expand our knowledge on a variety of subjects or pick up a new hobby. I've been enjoying The Great Courses Plus while researching this season of Flashback. Lectures like Play Ball, The Rise of Baseball as America's Pastime, History of the Supreme Court, and Battlefield Europe have helped me connect the dots on several stories from history. Right now, they're giving our listeners a special limited-time offer, a free month of unlimited access to their entire library. Sign up now through our special URL. Go to thegreatcoursesplus.com/Ozzy. That's thegreatcoursesplus.com/OZY. thegreatcoursesplus.com/Ozzy. To listen to this episode in full, click the link in the show notes or search your podcast app for Flashback, History's Unintended Consequences, with new episodes dropping every Wednesday.